You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Play in Alberta, everything stays in Alberta. Revenues from Play Alberta stay in the province. You can help get the Henday built. Josh Archibald, Tom, a little bit of a surprise today. Not that Archibald is playing, but the fact that Josh Archibald now has he's been granted a medical exemption, which means he's not just a one-off. He can play tonight. He can play game three. He can play game four, five, six, seven. He is cleared to play the rest of the postseason because he's able to travel.
Yeah, and you clarified that nicely in the first segment there. He got the medical exemption. Now, whether or not he plays game three, four, five, and so on, I think will be dictated by how he performs tonight. But Greg's like, this guy's played eight games this season. He missed a ton of time, obviously, at the start of the year. Yes, he's unvaccinated, and now we're finally coming out of all of the COVID thing. Let's see what he's got tonight. You talked about the chipping and chasing. You talked about the Oilers getting on the Kings' defense, imposing their will physically. They did that in the second period. In the first, they were on their heels a bit. In the third, it was a little bit more back and forth. But in the second, they were good. Tonight, if Josh Archibald isn't in first on the forecheck when he's on the ice, Greggs, and he isn't laying out a defenseman or separating the defenseman from the puck, creating turnovers, if he's not doing that consistently, then I don't think he's playing in game three. I'm not expecting him to dangle anybody. I'm not expecting him to score just a highlight reel goal. If his line scores, it's going to be a greasy goal that they muck from working hard and putting pucks in deep and digging and working hard beneath the goal line and finding ways to just score a nasty garbage goal in front of Jonathan Quick. If they score a nice one, I'll be surprised. That'll be nice. But I think his job today is to lay the body, not take any bad penalties like his last playoff game, Greg's. And we'll see how it goes. But a surprise, because I thought he was not on the radar considering how little he's played. And I think he's going to be tapping into the adrenaline for the majority of the night because I don't know if he's up to speed. I know he talked about the simulation games, but Greg's like, yeah. Really? It's not the same as the Stanley Cup playoffs.
No, not at all. He did play against Vancouver, right? He just played a game recently, so it's not like he's been sitting out for months. And it's not like this is a guy who's, you know, I don't expect to see him playing 14 or 15 minutes, right? He'll come in, he'll bring some energy. I think there's a main reason why Josh Archibald is in the lineup. Josh Archibald's good on the forecheck. He's physical. All right. Now, killing penalties, the Oilers' penalty kill has been really good now for the last month or so. But I noticed that five of their top six forwards were on the penalty kill a lot in game one. I think Jay Woodcroft would like to reduce that a little bit. So that's where Archibald comes in. But more so, I think he wants the Oilers to be more physical tonight. You've got a young blue line who's not very big. And Archibald's a very good hitter. Now, I know that, you know, some of the numbers, possession numbers don't look great. Totally fair. But they don't tell every story, okay? They can tell you one thing, but they're not. It's not like they're, oh, this is what the numbers say. They're 100% correct. Because I will caution people who used the numbers and said, well, Ethan Bear is a guaranteed top four defenseman. I was like, well, no, he's 5'10". He's not an elite skater. I think he's a third pair defenseman.
Sure.
And look at Ethan Bear since he's outside of Edmonton. He's a healthy scratch in Carolina. Right? Doesn't mean he's a bad player. He's just sometimes that if you only go by what the numbers tell you, you're going to be disappointed. Because it's the irony is people say, well, don't go only by the eye test. Well, don't go only by the numbers then. Like, I'm telling you. Like, Josh Archibald, sure, possession numbers can be one thing, right? And they haven't been great.
Of course.
Guy's only played seven or eight games, so I think most people would say, I think that's called a small sample size. Archibald is going to bring an element that the coach wants. And he wants it on each line. So he's got Cassian and Archibald. Those are the two most aggressive forecheckers and hitters. You look at hits per 60, those are the two guys. It's not close on the team. Right? Fogle's then third. So you put McLeod, Fogle, and Cassian as a line. And we all know that the chances of those four lines playing all the time are pretty rare. Coming out of penalty kill, coming out of power play, Woodcroft uses different lines. Yeah. I think you'll see a few shifts of McDavid and Draisaitl. Now, they only played .128 together last game, 5-on-5, right? But, they had some good chances. So I think you'll see the odd shift like that from them. But I believe Archibald's in specifically because Jay Woodcroft feels they got to wear down this young, smaller, inexperienced LA defense.
Agreed 100%. Now, here's what I'm curious to see what happens. Speaking of wearing down defense and creating panic and turnovers, how hard are the Kings going to go after the Oilers' blue liners today? Because Edmonton had its issues in its own zone. You talked about that first period. I think that the template was set by Minnesota a few weeks ago. That game, Minnie was all over the Oilers' defense. We know that Duncan Keith and Evan Bouchard, they had a rough night in many, but I think that that was a cue for some team scouting Edmonton to go at the Oilers' defense. So I fully expect Edmonton to be chipping and chasing, pounding the body in the offensive zone and trying to work pucks off of the Kings' defense. But I fully expect the Kings to be trying to do that at the other end. And, Greg's, that's kind of their MO is they work hard in the offensive zone. They don't have a ton of finish in the offensive zone, but they work hard for those opportunities. If Edmonton's clean and on its exits and it backtracks well, doesn't give any rush chances or limits them, then I think this should be a favorable outcome for the Oilers. We'll see if that happens, though.
They'll go six defense. Not a real big surprise. No changes for the LA Kings.
Yep.
To me, the Oilers, and this is more their top six, although two of the goals came with Nugent Hopkins' line on the ice, although they really didn't have it. Like the last no goal, I don't care who's on the ice. I'm not blaming any of the forwards who are on the ice for that sequence. But the Oilers are going to have to do a better job against the Iafallo Dano Moore line.
Yeah.
And that's a good line, but that line shouldn't be dominating you. They're not that good.
And they're missing one of their best players on that line in Victor Arvidsson, who is not going to be playing tonight. Iafallo steps in, has a great game for them. And I thought that that line was the best three players on the ice for the majority of the game. They're just the most consistent. They're in the offensive zone. They were sound defensively. Was that night a one-off for that line? Maybe. Do I have my concerns? Yes. Do I want to point back to the 2020 qualifying round? No. But that's what it makes me remember is, remember Jonathan Toews went off? Remember Kubalik went off? Kirby Dach had a great series. But I don't want to point to that too much, Greg. So maybe that game that the Dano line had the other night was a one-off, and they'll be on their heels a little bit more in their own zone trying to play sound defensively against one of Edmonton's top two lines.
Well, I think they can play well again, but you know, for them to score three goals 5-on-5 every game, obviously that I think is highly unlikely. But you know, Adrian Kempe, their leading goal scorer, 35, he was quiet. So the thing about the playoffs is you don't need the Dano line to be dominant every game. If they dominate one game and win, that's a huge contribution from them, right? And so Edmonton's going to need that. Edmonton's, they're like, as Leon Draisaitl said today, hey, our special teams, it's fine. You want to get your power play going, and LA's penalty kill has struggled for months. So it's really not a surprise, I think, that Edmonton's power play had success, but it's dangerous for LA because Edmonton, their power play gets a little bit of confidence. We've seen it over the years. It can really get rolling.
Right, and it did the other night, which was great.
It's their 5-on-5 play, which has been good under Woodcroft, that especially the start, the first 16 minutes, they were on their heels. They weren't as aggressive or assertive, and I felt like at times in that game, they got stubborn and tried to carry the puck through the neutral zone too often, led to some turnovers. It was 7-1 scoring chances, or odd man rushes, in favor of LA. 7-1.
Yeah.
So Edmonton's 5-on-5 play, they tighten it up. I think they got a really good chance to win.
Did you also feel they got caught up in the moment a little bit? Do you think it affected
them? Well, that might help. That might start early on, but that should be gone by, like, Yamamoto or Ratamoto, as I like to call him. He got, he admitted it. He got caught up. He took that penalty early on. But look at his game after that. He was excellent.
Yes.
So, to me, this is the play. You can't, we're caught up with it. You're 30 minutes into the game. Like, if the adrenaline gets you the first few shifts, that's fair. That's human nature. But after that, no, it shouldn't be. That to me is an excuse after once you get past the first few shifts.
I liked the way that the guys' demeanors were in the press conferences this morning. And I'll point to Leon Draisaitl. Listen, we know he's confident and some would say arrogant and cocky, whatever. He has every right to be. But now, I'm not saying he was completely dismissive towards what happened in game one, but Greg's, you and I were sitting beside each other in the Hall of Fame room listening to him, and he was kind of like, you know what, game one, whatever. We know we need to be better. We know which areas we made mistakes in. And he even discussed the Mike Smith play, and he goes, I have no worries about Mike Smith, and totally brushed it off. And it wasn't – we've known those guys for a long time, all of them since they've been here, and they weren't selling us – some kind of garbage. Like, that was them being genuine. So I like where their mindset is, reading their demeanor today in the room, listening to them. I think they're in a good place. I think they know where they need to shore up their game, and I feel like they will. I truly do.
You look at, you know, like line matchups tonight, and I went through the game and the shift chart and stuff. There wasn't like a massive heavy matchup really across the board anywhere.
No.
Right? So I wonder if Jay Woodcroft tries more specific matchups tonight. I'll be curious. Maybe he won't, right? Because he hasn't done that, and their team's had success, but it's the playoffs, and it's different, and now you're seeing the same guys all the time. I'm going to be curious to see if we see that increase here in game two as far as specific matchups he wants.
Yeah, especially later in the game. Situations will dictate that as well. It was funny because even Todd McClellan today, going into his availability, he kind of poo-pooed that as well. He's like, oh, I've been reading all this stuff about the matchups and everything. He's like, I don't know. I didn't really see that completely the same way as you guys do. And he's like, to be honest with you, I don't really care. So they might just let these guys go, roll them out, let them fly. Yes, I'm sure Jay Woodcroft will throw in a few wrinkles here and there. He's got last change. Take advantage. Make the most of it. And these are two guys behind the benches that know each other very well. And I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of that game within the game, but maybe not as much as we anticipated early on and heading into this series as well.
Tommy, quickly, around the league last night, I just want to say John Klingberg is maybe my new favorite NHL player. Really? I've been saying it for years. Rasmus Anderson's the biggest pretender in the game, and finally someone called him on it. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I don't know if you saw that sequence. Just typical Rasmus Anderson. Like, Klingberg even says, he goes, like, I'm probably like the least fighter guy on our team. And he comes over, wants to fight, and then he waits, and then the last second, then, you know, when Klingberg's kind of not ready, right, and then he starts throwing him, like, man, I hope someone gets him at some point.
It'll happen.
Eventually, I don't know when, but somebody should, because he is the biggest pretender in the league.
Since he came into the league with Calgary, he's always been. Remember when he was yapping the Oilers? I think he called Edmonton phony at one point after a game a few years ago, and then the next year Edmonton got better. It was the year Calgary won the West, and Anderson was running his mouth. It was a game in Calgary.
Well, was that after the Mike Smith fight?
No. This was like a year
or the
before.
Cassian, was it? Okay. I thought it was maybe the Cassian when Cassian grabbed Kachuk. I thought it was that game. Right? And they lost that game, and Cassian, that's when Cassian got kicked out. Would he get like a 9-minute penalty or something like that, if I recall? But then I'm getting suspended for it. Maybe I'll have to go look, but I thought that, but either way, I do remember him saying something.
He's a guy you watch and you're like, okay, like, enough already.
But I like guys like that in the league. There's good people that you shouldn't say. You want jerks in the league. I think it's good for it. But I do love that Klingberg called him out. I don't know. We'll see what happens in that series. Pittsburgh and the Rangers.
Hey.
Man, what a marathon game.
How did Pittsburgh win that game?
Well, they outshot him. Did you see that Pittsburgh dominated?
But you're down to Louis Domingue. You're down.
Yeah, that was
Ricard Raquel.
Crazy.
Jake Gensel gets beat up. You don't. Casey DeSmith goes down. You're already on your third stringer. Like, New York, I still think, is going to win that series. But it's the magic of the playoffs, man. And game one's, like, how does Florida lose?
Well, hey, give the Capitals credit in that game, man. Like, Washington played really well, and which, you know, doesn't bode well for me because I picked the Panthers to win the whole thing. But it is only game one. But still, they're obviously going to have to still have to play better for sure.
Yep.
And then Nashville and Colorado, that's what happens when your best goalie goes out.
Yeah.
That one looked like it could be a best of, you know, that could be done in three.
Yeah. Big save, Dave. MIA had to go to Connor Ingram. Yikes.
Yeah. Wow. No offense to Dave, man. Like, Nathan MacKinnon in the postseason is pretty good. But Colorado, that was the first game they were healthy all season long with their entire lineup, and Nashville doesn't have their number one goalie. That's just, I don't care who you are. There's a lot of teams. You know, maybe like an elite team, but Nashville's the number 8 seed, and now they lose their starting goaltender who's probably going to be the runner-up in the Vezina. That's really difficult to overcome, man. Really difficult. Tommy, we'll tune in. Extended pregame show again tonight. You and Connor. Connor Halley's back for a little pregame show tonight.
Welcome back, Cons. Dennis Bernstein is going to be our Kings insider for the entire series, Greg's. I confirmed it with him. DB's a beauty. He's got that Bronx accent.
Oh, I know.
And he's an LA guy now. We'll have a bit of a round table. Bettman speaking at 7. Are you going to be down there for that?
I have to go home and pick up my son because it could take him to the game tonight.
Okay.
But I think I'll be back in time. And if not, I do have somebody that I've planted the question. Because I was like, if I'm not there, I want someone to ask, why can't the game start on time? Why announce it at 7 o'clock? Seriously.
I know.
It's the biggest joke in the NHL right now. So hopefully that gets... Because trust me, it impacts fans. If the game starts at 7, everybody knows it starts at 7. The fans will adapt. There'll be no problem. But what happens is, especially for playoffs, think about it. Toronto game could start at 5 o'clock. Then the Edmonton game could actually start at 7:30. Because the games are less than 2.5 hours now. If they actually start at the top of the hour, they're less than 2.5 hours.
Yes.
You could start the game in Edmonton at 7:30. Think about anybody who has young kids now. Your young kids could, that's 45 minutes earlier, because right now the games are starting at 8:15.
Yeah.
That's a whole period earlier. Your kids could watch, now you do, you know what, kids don't have to stay up late, they still get to watch a period, they're excited, you're happy, you're, you know, doing the bedtime routine at intermission, boom, you're back ready for the second. Like, you want bigger audience, this is what you do. And people, oh, well, TV wants it. Screw TV. Like, I'm sorry, what do you mean they want it? What, where does the NFL start? Top of the hour.
Yep.
What about soccer? They start, like, you see them, they got, like, a stopwatch on the side. Doom, doom. Okay, we got 15 seconds. Their whistle to start the game is right when they say they are. It's only the NHL's like, well, our tickets will say 7:30, but that could be 7:43 one night, or 7:39, or 7:48. You know, whatever you guys want. Like, it's a joke.
8:48 in L.A. for the Drew Doughty 1,000-game ceremony.
Yeah.
So
brutal.
I like it. Good question.
Tommy, have a good one.
Thanks, Grace.